family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
It's all for nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel.
Put out an all-points bulletin. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody.
Heavens, what kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap. It's time for...
Dutch, Jones, Dutch, Jones.
Radio program.
And now for something completely different.
Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. I call into order this session of the Dutch Jones radio program. The 21st of April already? 28th. I'm looking at the calendar wrong. 28th of April. I was like, what? We went back in time? 28th of April, 2011. I can bend time and space. Don't make me show you. April 28th, 2011. Just, what do we got? 2 days left of this great month, April. It just flew by. I am Dutch Jones, and actually I'm not. Dutch Jones is a fictional character made up for your amusement and enjoyment. There is no Dutch Jones. I am merely one of many actors over the past centuries that have played Dutch Jones on the radio, going all the way back to the 1600s when the first radio was invented. There was a Dutch Jones then, but he was Dutch Jones. And so there's been some slight changes. So there will be many more after me, hopefully. Someone will step in when I get tired of doing this and will be the new Dutch Jones. But that's just the way it goes. I am Dutch Jones for now. Coming to you from Camp Kahuia, nestled in the highlands of the Sierra Nevada Mountains, obviously poking the New World Order in the eye. We found out that the police are going around town talking about us again, actually sheriff's deputies. It's kind of funny because I got an email that said that the Corn Keys got somebody pulling into their driveway, a police officer, during their show yesterday. And then yesterday we found out people are going into restaurants and, hey, what do you know about that church up there? You know, what are they doing up there? That kind of stuff. And who knows? They're just shaking the tree. I think it's funny. All they got to do is listen to the radio show and come to our trainings and come to our church. Stacy and I were talking today about secret societies, and it's like there are just tons of them. It actually started because Lou asked what a fraternity was, and I said it's a place where guys get a lot of gay sex but do a lot of drugs. But I said, you know, everybody belongs to a secret society, and Stacy's like, I don't, and it's, you know, we don't. Everything we do is out there, up and up, in, you know, almost in your face sometimes. And I get criticized for that, too, from people that are like, oh, you're too bold. You're doing too much, Dutch. You shouldn't be doing that. Oh, man. But they're going to be out there doing stuff, so I don't have any fear because I'm not doing anything ungodly. I may be doing some stuff illegal that I don't know about. That may be the case, but I'm not 100% positive about that. Because who knows what the laws are now? You know, they always say, ignorance of the law is no excuse. Well, when you make gazillions of laws and change them constantly without properly informing the people, that's just going to happen. Speaking of the law, last night after Bible study, which was great, we talked about the Boston Tea Party, which I think we're going to talk about some this afternoon on Practical Christianity with Pastor Warren Mark Campbell from the Church at Kahuia. I said, today people just don't want to do anything like that. I would love to see some Christians go to the DMV and just start preaching Bible verses at people about, you know, woe to those that make unrighteous decrees, you know, do not be a terror to good works. And when I got home from Bible study from Brian Hunt, he's like the supreme commander of the medical militia for Southern California or something. Anyway, he emailed me a thing. He wanted to know if I knew about this. Back on February 11th, three pastors, now get this, from Calvary Chapel Hemet's down there in Riverside County, went to a Riverside County DMV and stood in the parking lot and started doing just what I said and were preaching. From Calvary Chapel, a 501c3 megachurch. I mean, these guys are the epitome of milquetoast Christianity, or so I thought. And they were, you know, reading verses out. There's a video on YouTube. I don't know. I could probably get it, but I'm not going to really hunt it down. But you could Google it. And the funny thing was, security guard came over to him and said that they had to leave. They were trespassing and that they can't preach there. And they said, well, what law are we breaking? We're not bothering anybody. We're off to the side. We're not impeding access to the business. And so the security guard left, and then later a highway patrolman who came back, Twinkle Toes saw the video, came back sounding kind of like a sodomite and told them that they were in violation of the preaching to a captive audience law, which I looked all over last night and I couldn't find it, and arrested one of them, put him in handcuffs, and then ended up arresting the other two and held them for 90 minutes down at the station over in Beaumont, took them all the way to Beaumont. Or Banning. Beaumont Banning is the same communities out there. And for 90 minutes, then cited them for misdemeanor trespassing. You know, what happened to the preaching to a captive audience thing? Well, anyway, these three guys have filed a lawsuit. That's why it popped up again. For their civil rights being violated against the specific officer, which I like doing that. Go after these specific officers, take everything they own. And then the highway patrol. Well, I bounced this off of Steve Klein and told him to talk to his lawyers about it. And he said the only thing they did wrong was that they stayed on government property. Their case would be easier to fight if they had stayed on the sidewalk, public domain area, public access area. But I think that's great that three – I may have to shut my mouth about some of these 501c3s if they're out there doing that, especially here in California. I never would have guessed. Now, Twinkle Toes, she saw the video. She made some comments on it on my Facebook page. If you go to Facebook, type in Dutch Jones, and you ask to friend me, I will friend you. I'm getting tons of friend requests. Page. Go to the what?
Contact page.
And
then up on the top, it has it.
And then up on the top, it has what?
Facebook.
I don't know what you're talking about. Oh, if you go to the top of our page here, mm-hmm. And it says visit us on Facebook. Yeah, join us on Facebook if you go up just underneath the Bulgarian webkit.
Contact us page.
Where's the contact us page? Up.
Right there, contact.
Oh, under contact, too. Cool. Lou, I didn't even know you did that. But you can find it, you know, through contact and all that kind of stuff, and you'll be able to see the video. I've gained a ton of friends. I've got a lot more people that are listening, I think, because of all the outlets that you guys are working on. Definitely because of Olima's Pod People Outreach. They're actually Olima's Pod People. They're not really mine. No yawning, Lou. I know you're tired, but no yawning. And so we got a lot of people. I lost a lot of people last night. I went on a tirade yesterday. I was really upset about some things that I've been seeing in the media that Israel's been doing, not to Palestinians or anything like that, but just in general, some of the laws that they've been coming up with against proselytizing and anti-Christian stuff. So I posted a bunch of it. Oh, man, did the haters come out of the woodwork. I had people just foaming at me. You know, these people that were supposedly in militias. I have an old friend who is a Jewish person. I was actually the best man at his wedding. I've told the story before. I found out the rehearsal day that the only reason he chose me is because all of his Jewish friends that he grew up with were mad at each other over who would be the best man, so he picked a Christian dude. The whole time I was there, I was having a blast. I kept saying, hey, you've got all these prophets and pictures, but I don't see any pictures of Jesus. What's up with that? So I was posting, you know, raw video of Jews victimizing Christians in Israel, cases of when Israel became a supposed nation in 48 and how they were butchering Christians and burning churches and killing priests and preachers. And I said, I'm just posting facts, guys. You know, let's argue the facts. Did this or did this not happen? Of course, I did the USS Liberty, and everybody got mad at me. So I think I lost another old friend, a Jewish old friend. He said, I don't know what happened to you, or you may think you're enlightened, but none of it. I said, why don't you just argue the points with me instead of calling me names? And then about 10 minutes after he did that, the town that he was in got hit by a devastating storm and like 200 people were killed. I'm not saying God was going after him. I'm just saying it's kind of weird that this one guy goes from arguing with me, calling me a poo-poo head, and saying I'm lying about Zionism, and then the next thing you know, God sends like 8 tornadoes down his street. He's still alive as far as I can tell. I hope nothing bad happened to him, but sometimes, you know, I don't know. I find it interesting. Am I a bad man for talking about that on the radio? Am I a bad man? Hey, we changed our monthly special a little bit, and we appreciate everybody that jumped in on that. You just sent out the last 2 backpacks today. Unfortunately, UPS upped their rates for shipping, so the last 2 packs we didn't make any money on. It cost us $15 a piece to ship a backpack. Because of, and they cited fuel costs. So we've been charging $10 for shipping on most of our stuff. I think we're going to have to go to 15, guys. And I apologize, but it's just, we're only making between $5 and $10 on these, on like things like backpacks. The donation thing where it was $25, we were making $10, but we lost, I think now we're down to $5 profit on that thing that we did. And not profit, but you know what I mean, coming out ahead. But it was for a good cause, and you guys got some gear, so I'm happy. We changed the deal a little bit that you have to get four of them for $90, just because they're not letting us buy one at a time anymore. We got to buy them in bulk. We also found another supplier today, and we're going to offer some really weird stuff, trinkets, you know, hurricane lamps, folding. Somebody asked if we had entrenching tools. We found a good source for entrenching tools. Yeah, I think that'll be the next special, the entrenching tools. If people make a donation, they get an entrenching tool.
What if they want entrenching tools?
Yeah, well, what we'll do is maybe tomorrow Lou and I will work together and get them up on the page. But we found this place out of, it's an American company. They're an importer, so not everything is American. But it's the same people that supply, like, mainline camping stores. So, like our little survival hatchets, we'll be able to sell them to you guys for, like, $6 instead of $8. Because we saved a little bit of money on who we're getting them from. And we want to pass that on to the regular listeners. You know, our general store people, people that just happen across, are still going to pay $8. But, huh?
So the donations,
yeah, donations are way down. And we used the last of our money. We paid the internet bill, though, right? So we're on for another month?
Yeah.
Okay, what about the electric bill? Are we caught up? Okay, but we have another one coming in like a week. So we'll need that. And it's summertime, so the electric bill goes up in here. Not that we're using more electricity to do the show, but we have to turn on all the fans to keep the equipment cool. That the fans that you hear in the background are to keep us from overheating. Oh, and what was his name? Chris from Jersey? Is that his name?
Mm-hmm.
Sent us the memory? Was that what was his name? Chris from Jersey? Right?
From New Jersey.
Lou?
Yes.
Okay, I wanted to make sure. We got the 4 gigs of memory just about an hour ago. I'm looking at them sitting on the table. So if you're listening in the podcast or listening live or you're in the guest room, thank you so very much. That's good. That was a great donation. An $85 donation. So I shouldn't say donations are down because, you know, Chris stepped up and it was 81. There are receipts right there. It's like $81. You look on that receipt right there. Tell me what the total was for shipping and everything, because that's... $81.92, Chris from New Jersey. So we're going to be trying to send you guys something out there in New Jersey. Send them some whistles and bumper stickers. Send them Lou for a week. Of course, that would probably defeat the whole donation thing. Yeah, we'll send them some stuff out. So thank you so very much. I know that Minuteman donated. He's going to be up here on the 20th, so we didn't ship your backpack. That saved us $15. See, that would help out. If you guys order stuff and then you come here once a month, we can just give it to you. And that would be great, too. Those of you that signed up for the class, for the Larry Witt class that's still on, we still have about 5 to 6 more positions open. I don't want to go too far over 30. Right now we're at like 22, 23. But just so you know, as of last night, it's a solid Steve Klein and Mrs. Steve Klein. What's her name, honey? Lorraine?
Lorraine
and Steve Klein will be here for the class. Mrs. Steve Klein. Well, that's where they used to do it in the old days. We'll be here for the class, so if you take the class, you'll get to meet them. We also found out that our facility is going to be... I just found this out today, Stacia. It's the first time you're going to hear this. About 30 Boy Scouts and Cub Scouts from the Bay Area will be using our shooting range that weekend.
Oh. Well,
you're going to be in the class. They're going to bring their own range officer, and they're going to check them out on mini 14s and 22s and stuff. Pastor mentioned it last night, but it went in one ear and out the other, and then that's where we were. We're getting their property ready. Lou has to go over and get their property ready across the river, where they right next to our pastor. The 20th, that weekend, the same weekend as the class. So we're gonna. It's gonna be a great weekend. It's gonna be awesome. We're gonna have 20 to 30 Cub and Boy Scouts shooting on the range. We're gonna have 20 to 30 people taking a class for 2 and 3 days in there. It's gonna be awesome. And then July 4th, they're coming back with another 25 to 30 people for church. That's for the 4th of July for that weekend.
Oh.
So we're gonna have, and I'm gonna be teaching some classes. Pastor and I are gonna be teaching classes to him out on the range, okay. Little Boy Scouts and Cub Scouts.
Well, I didn't know what we're
doing for. That's what we're doing for the 4th of July. We're staying here because I just found this out. So we've got a lot of good community outreach stuff going on with our church and our shooting range. And these are kids from the inner city, Atascadero, if I'm saying that right.
Yeah.
Wasn't it like Pinky Tuscadero a character? I don't know. Is that her? Yeah, Atascadero. I know there's a state hospital there. I've been there for investigations on, you know, patient abuse. But so we've got a lot of stuff going on. And then June, we've added the night operations class. If the Larry Wood class goes really good, I think the night operations class is going to go even better because we're going to have a bunch of motivated people that haven't been here before. We got a lot of first-timers coming to this Larry Wood class. And I'm telling you, things are starting to happen. People are starting to freak out. And they need to have answers, and we're here to supply those answers, and I need you guys to be ambassadors for us. Even if you can't make it here, because I got people from all over the country now saying, hey, what's this going on? What are you doing? Say what now? Because they're hearing it from you guys, and I don't know how, I mean, they don't even listen to the show at first. Yeah, my buddy at work told me this. I'm like, well, who's your buddy? Well, I don't really want to say, you know, but he heard you, he downloaded you, he heard you here. This is being heard in places that I don't even know what they are. And so God is blessing us, and I want to thank the listeners for that. I want to thank, in the next hour, I'll thank Liberty Tree Radio and but Scotty, God bless you for carrying us, and people that rebroadcast us, that just take the whole podcast and send it out. Olima, you're a big part of that, so thank you. So these things are going to keep getting bigger, and just remember that. Right here in the grassroots part of it, we have to make sure that we maintain our focus on God first, and as it grows, and that's, I'm looking forward to working with Cub Scouts. You know how cool it is to be a Christian militia being allowed to train Cub Scouts? I know people that are older are going, well, Cub Scouts are basically a Christian militia. Not anymore, especially not from California. They don't even allow them to have pocket knives anymore. They don't even teach them. In fact, I was going to have Lou enroll in the Cub Scouts 2-3 years ago. And when they wouldn't let us in when they found out who I was and where we were from. They were like, oh, they never returned our calls. You know, they don't want to have people that are going to be bringing guns and making bow and arrows and teaching real skills. Here, the Cub Scouts get a badge for, like, racial tolerance and, you know, lesbian understanding and stuff like that. So it's in cooking, making Orange Julius badge. I saw one of those. So we've got a lot of good things happening here, and I'm very excited about it. You know, sometimes I'm kind of bummed, and I know you guys know that. But right now I'm extremely excited that the Lord is putting a lot of people in our path to be able to work with them. And I'm just going to do everything I can to represent Him well. And I need your prayers for that. I told you yesterday, I don't like being a trainer. I do it because I'm called to it. But when I do it, and I don't get like butterflies or stutter. I can get up and talk to anybody. Heads of state to a bum in an alley, I'll talk to him exactly the same way. I have no problem doing it. It's just I'd rather be learning. I'd rather be in the class. That's why I'm looking forward to Larry Wick. I'm going to actually get to be a student again. It's been a long time since I've been a student in these things. I think when we had the team tactics class with the airsoft up in the mountains, huh, Lou? When we went to you don't have a mic on. When we went to DFT, huh? That's the last time I was a student. So that was January?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, January.
December, November.
That was November. Wow, it was that long ago. And is I don't know if Minuteman's in there. He was there for that when he came up, drove all those hours. Let me see here. I got to open the chat room here. Boy, look at everybody that's in there. Welcome, everyone. Welcome, everyone. Oh, and don't forget to tune in early to listen to Bagpipes 360. Warland is playing bagpipes. At least the stuff I've been hearing is nothing but bagpipes. I love them. And he's doing the voice of Jefferson Territory. So encourage him and help him out. Do that. It saves us on bandwidth, and we really like it. It gives us the ability to do some more stuff if we don't have to play the music to do a ramp up to our show. I encourage him to continue, you know, Warland, to do more talk, but if you're comfortable just playing music, God bless you. And if anybody wants to come on after me, any of you people in the chat room, I don't think there's anybody in there that I would say no to. I'm looking, I don't know, Twinkle Toes gets a little wild when she gets on the mic, but okay, everybody in there, I would, you know, give you the password and all that, and you could come on after me and it's QWERTY. It's the username is 123456 and the password is QWERTY. No, I'm just kidding. But you could get in and do an hour show. All you need is a headphone. You, if you want to play music and stuff, it gets a little more complicated. You need to know, Twinkle Toes is like, what? I just wanted to see if you were listening. It gets a little more complicated, and Lou would have to walk you through it, and we're having a hard time because I think Worland's computer is resisting him. I think it's possessed. But usually it's not that hard, but doing talks easy. If you just want to get on and read from the Bible, you want to read from the Confederate Catechism or something. I actually need to find my Confederate Catechism. I want to do a show on that, just stuff on the history of the Confederacy. So that would be good. Today, I found something out pretty amazing. We were clearing fields of, is it called Chinese thistle?
I don't know.
It's got the purple bluish bud on it. It's just real. It's an invasive plant. What happened to all those little cards we got from the USDA? Okay, we need to get that out because today it would have come in handy because we're clearing that field. This thistle with like this purplish lavender head. I'm colorblind. Real, it's not pretty when you're up close to it. Stays like it's real pretty. I can see some right now down in the field, and I'm gonna go kill it tomorrow. But we're pulling it out, sticky, nasty, pokey, violent, you know, stuff. But I was talking to David Hari, who was the caretaker for the property we're working on, and I said, man, it's too bad there wasn't some way we could use this. And he goes, oh, yeah. He goes, I don't know what part of the plant it is, but it's good for your liver. So it reminded me again that I really need to study the local flora. I know how to eat just about anything here that's on two or four legs. two legs. I just said, well, I guess a turkey would be two legs, wouldn't it? For a minute there, I thought I was sounding like a cannibal. And I got a turkey story here in a minute. But the thistle up here grows just insane. What were those called? Date nut daisies. Dandelions. Lou's going to pick dandelions over at this one property. And you can eat dandelions. There's so much up here we can eat. I know the miner's lettuce. There's this one blue flower that you pull it, and there's a little nut in the root ball. It tastes great. I was eating those today a little bit. I know that there's nightshade that's deadly poisonous, but there's chives. Wild chives. There's all kinds of stuff that we can eat. And I really want to focus on that. And I'm thinking for our October 1st class, I'm looking for people that know this kind of stuff. Maybe we should put together a class. IC Freedom says milk thistle, good for liver cleanse. Yes, that would be something that I don't know. I don't know what part of the plant.
It hurts going down though.
Yeah, Daniel, I don't think you eat the leaves, Lou. I think it has something to do with the stalk or maybe I don't know. Don't anybody go eat thistle on my word right now. I don't want you guys with a bad liver to go chow down a thistle and kill thrash yourself. Look at the color of that bird on the bush out there.
I'd like to get a book, find a book on all that.
Yeah, we need to get some expertise on this. I know what poke salad is. We eat the miner's lettuce. It's rich in vitamin C. It tastes really good. It grows seasonally. I'm looking out the window right here to see all the different kind of plants. There's all kinds of lavender-colored flowers. There's some thistle right there, a big bunch of it we got to get tomorrow. Spearmint grows around here, too, Warland's saying, and it does grow here. So we've got an abundance of food all around us, and we ignore it. So I want to make sure I don't neglect that because, you know, sometimes I poo-poo that because I tell people, oh, you know, just give me a pointed stick, and I'll go get me a pig or something. But no. The reality is we're going to be gathering a lot of the natural stuff. I found out that the buckeye trees, if you get the buckeye seed at a certain point, it's very, very good for you. It's very healthy. We got the acorns here. I was looking at all the stuff in the museum that we went to last week that the Indians, they would eat. And they spend a lot of time. Well, I don't know why I said words. That was weird. A lot of time processing the food, but they worked it out, and they figured out how to live off the land. Sure, granted they were 5 foot tall and 80 pounds, but maybe we'll end up. I'll go back to my fighting weight of 128 pounds, 5'7", if I was eating like that, and I don't see a problem with it. I got a turkey story for you. Just before we went to air, Frank, one of the guys that lives on the property here, he was out working on a neighbor's property, and we got wild turkey that roam all around. They're not domesticated. they'll still cut you to shreds if you try and fight with them, or if you go near one of their young ones. But there'll be 40 or 50 of them in one big flock, and then there'll be a bunch of littler flocks of juvenile males and females running around. Well, he had some CDs playing. I think he was playing Third Eye Blind or some Christian group that I've never heard of. Do you remember what he said? It was playing some specific song that I don't know, because I don't really listen to contemporary Christian rock. But it was playing, and he looked over, and this turkey had his head in the car, because the door was open, up against the speaker, and the turkey was like mesmerized by the speaker. So he walks over, and he showed me a picture of this. He had a picture on his phone of him reaching down and petting the head of the turkey with his fingers. And I said, wow, that's pretty cool. He says, it gets better. He goes, I put the phone away. What's this? Yeah, and just grabbed it, picked it up, and started petting it. He didn't get any pictures of that, but I trust him. He said he was petting it. Who was that?
It's a guess.
Okay, I'll get back to that in a minute. I didn't know guests could send us messages. That's cool. We got a private message from one of the guests. I didn't know it would even come through. The turkey are pretty easy to catch if you have the right kind of music, I guess. Someone saying in the instant message, it's a Ustreamer guest. We have 7 guests. Was saying that the Boy Scouts are Obongo's, secret youth force. That's true. A lot of people don't realize this, but we talked about it last year sometime, that the Explorer Scouts, which are part of Boy Scouts of America, are being used to go after, being trained to go after Americans. So now we get them. We're going to get some over here, and we're going to get to train them. So anytime we can turn a few, that's great. Well, that's the music. I couldn't even believe the Alamo's playing there in the background, guys. We'll be back after the break. I am Dutch Jones. This is the Stronghold Radio. We are coming to you from the church at Kaweah, where no king but King Jesus is our battle cry. And we'll be back after the break.
You can hear a ghostly bugle as the men go marching by. You can hear them as the answer to their roll call in the sky. Colonel Travis, Davy Crockett, and 180 more. Captain Dickinson, Jim Bowie, present and accounted for. Back in 1836, Houston said to Travis, get some volunteers and go, fortify the Alamo. Well, the men came from Texas and from old Tennessee, and they joined up with Travis just to fight for the right to be free. Indian scouts with squirrel guns, men with muzzle loaders, stood together, heel and toe, to defend the Alamo. You may ne'er see your loved ones, Travis told them that day. Those who want to can leave now, those who fight to the death, let them stay. In the sand he drew a line with his army saber. Out of 185, not a soldier crossed the line. With his banners a-dancing in the dawn's golden light, Santa Anna came prancing on a horse that was black as the night. Sent an officer to tell Travis to surrender. Travis answered with a shell and a rousing rebel yell. Santa Anna turned scarlet, played to Quaylo, he roared, I will show them no quarter, everyone will be put to the sword. 185, holding back 5,000. 5 days, 6 days, 8 days, 10. Travis held and held again. Then he sent for replacements for his wounded and lame. But the troops that were coming never came, never came, never came. Twice he charged and blew recall on the fatal third time. Santa Anna breached the wall and he killed them one and all. Now the bugles are silent and there's rust on each sword, and the small band of soldiers lie asleep in the arms of the Lord. In the southern part of Texas, near the town of San Antone, like a statue on his pintle rides a cowboy all alone. And he sees the cattle grazing where a century before Santa Anna's guns were blazing and the cannons used to roar. And his eyes turn sort of misty and his heart begins to glow, and he takes his hat off slowly to the men of Alamo. to the 13 days of glory at the siege of Alamo.
When the crash does come, when there is a natural disaster, during civil unrest, the last thing you want to be is a refugee. So check out DutchJones.info. That's www.DutchJones.info. We have the supplies you need and the information you will need. That's www.DutchJones.info. Hello, everyone. Everybody comfortable? Everybody relaxed? Everybody got what they need? Anybody need a drink? Anybody got to get up and go? Now it's time to take a break. Go to the restroom if you have to. Stretch. Go outside and howl at the moon if it's dark where you're at. I'm Dutch Jones. This is the Dutch Jones Radio Program on Stronghold Radio. Coming to you from Camp Kauia, Kauia Commonwealth, Central California, the belly button of California. Outside the gates of Sequoia National Park in the rolling mountainous foothills of the Sierra Nevada Mountains, doing everything we can to fight tyranny, to be a best of a reflection as we can of our Lord Jesus Christ, no king but King Jesus. And if we step on a few toes, I'm not sorry about that. I'm not going to bend my message. I'm not going to stop being who God has called us to be, me to be and you to be, just so people can go, oh, I really like listening to Dutch. He's so moderate, you know. You never hear about anybody writing great books of history called, you know, Great Moderates in History. No, no. You either love me, hate me, but don't be lukewarm about me, is what I always say. It's you know, it's a good pattern to be. During the break, I popped into my email, and I got an email from Chuck Baldwin. Actually, it's a mass mailing. I subscribed to his newsletter. And he had mentioned in there that he was contacted by the National Tea Party. I don't even understand how the Tea Party works. I don't know what the difference is between the National Tea Party, if it's grassroots, what are they doing with the National Tea Party? But anyway, they said explicitly that they would not endorse Newt Gingrich for president or any other Republican. That they're going to go with Ron Paul when he announces, if he hasn't already. I haven't been watching the news today. The Tea Party says they're going to get behind Ron Paul. It'd be neat to see Ron Paul and Chuck Baldwin run together, wouldn't it? I think that'd be good. One interesting thing about Newt Gingrich is he converted to Catholicism. I just checked into that, and he converted himself, which is funny because I didn't know you could be a Catholic if you'd been divorced, because he divorced his first wife via fax machine while she was in the hospital dying of cancer. I don't know if she's still alive or not, but I have no desire for Newt Gingrich to lead this country. Not a big fan of his. But so Ron Paul is their choice again, but he's going to run as a Republican. So I just don't see him getting the nomination. I wish he'd wise up. Maybe cool if him and his son would run, you know, Rand Paul on an independent ticket, on the constitutionalist ticket. I don't know. I'll vote for any good man or woman that runs for president, but I'm not going to vote for somebody who's, you know, on the Republican ticket. It's just not, you know, I don't agree with their ideals, and I don't want anything to do with what they're going to do once they get in office. Because remember what I said during the last election? Everybody was like, oh, we've got to vote Republican. We've got to get the Democrats out of there. We've got to defeat this. We've got to defeat that. We've got to promote this. And I said, in 6 months' time, tell me how good you feel about all them Republicans you got in. Seriously? Do you really feel all that good about all the Republicans that got in? Do you really think there was a revolution in the ballot box? Nah, nothing changed. You know, you got Boehner and all those other guys in there compromising. I don't know how to say his name. Boehnermuse. Bonner. I don't know. Bonhoeffer. I don't know. Biedermannhoff group. Or just corrupt. He's a politician. And I always say this. Career politicians, with few exceptions, have to be mentally ill. They're the same kids in high school and junior high that ran for, well, they didn't get beat up, but they ran for student government. just so that they could be popular, deep-seated desire to be liked. I heard somebody say one of the biggest things I remembered about President Clinton, he could be in a room full of supporters, but if he found out one guy didn't like him, he would spend his whole evening trying to convince that guy to like him.
Oh.
And I've heard that before about Clinton, but it was a good reminder. I'm not sure who said it today on one of the talk shows, but that's the way politicians are. You know, it's kind of a Sally Field moment. They like me. They really like me. No, I like the guy that goes in, hey, I'm here for one term. I'm going to do what they sent me to do, and then I'm going to get out because I'm going to burn a lot of bridges. I'm going to make a lot of people mad. There's no way I'm going to survive, so I'm just going to, boom, one-term office, one-term politician. I would never run. I mean, I couldn't even get a job as the new Aflac duck, I found out, because they do, like, this huge background check. And they did pick a new duck for Aflac because, remember, they got rid of Gilbert Gottfried because he twittered all those Japanese jokes during the tsunami. Hey, we lost like five people during the break. Yeah, did you guys, switch over to Glee or something? That's kind of weird. Where'd everybody go? But, I don't get excited about the Tea Party. We're going to talk a little, because I get excited about the original Tea Party, the real Tea Party in Boston Harbor. Not the garbage that's going on now, because you can't get people to work together now like you did back then in the original 13 colonies. When they found out that Boston was being besieged by the British, that their food was cut off, that cannonades were firing in, the rest of the colonies stuck together and sent food, smuggled food into the people, and prayed. They had, I can't say national, but they had region-wide, New England-wide, all the way down to the Carolinas, Georgia, the different colonies, days of fasting and prayer for the people of Boston. Now, these days, we see this stuff all the time. The most recent one that comes to mind is when the Browns up there in the Northeast were doing the Show Me the Law tax thing, and they got besieged by ATF and all that stuff. And a few people surrounded them and protected them for a few months, and then it dwindled. And then when there was nobody there, they went to prison, and nobody talks about it anymore. Dr. Dino. What's Dr. Dino's real name, Lou? I can tell off the top of my head. Ken Hovind. Everybody rallied around him until he went to prison, for what they said was stealing from his own bank account, which I still don't understand that structuring. But it's weird that people today, the water issue out here in California, why don't 50,000 farmers just walk over to those pumps and go, step aside, we're not going to kill you, federal guards, but you can see you're outgunned. Block the road so other officers, if you have enough people, turn the water on. Make a symbolic effort. And it comes down to it is everybody's too afraid of losing their own stuff. Like, I make jokes all the time. It's like when the economy collapses, it's just going to bring it down to the level I've been living at for the last 8 years. And most of my life, not my adult life, but most of my childhood life up to 18, 17 when I joined the Army, I lived in poverty. I was used to it. It's no big deal. It makes sense to me. But everybody's got so much to lose now. You're not going to see the kind of things we saw in the American Revolution. It's going to be completely different. It won't be the same. So everybody's fighting for it to be exactly the same. I see all these paper tigers and cyber militias, and they're like, well, the founding fathers, they're trying to give rebirth to that sentimentality, and it's not going to happen. One, we're dealing with completely different people. Two, they're looking at it through a filter. They think that everybody was involved in the revolution. It was like 3-5%. But the difference was you had a few key, what would be the American nobility, even though we didn't have nobility, but you get what I'm saying, that were willing to risk it all to make sure that this thing worked. You don't see that today. I mean, people get more upset about a bad call on a major NFL playoff game than they do about what goes on in politics. Look at how many people don't even know who their representatives are. They always do those man-in-the-street interviews, and 80% clearly of America are oblivious to what's going on in their own community, much less the nation or the world. We're up against a different paradigm here. We're going to have to reinvent the wheel. We're not going to be able to have a third great revolution. I mean, we lost the second one when the North defeated the South in that war of aggression. So we're going to have to figure out another way to motivate people to get them, behind it, at least get them out of the way. It goes back to the sheepdog concept. I'm going to have to wade through a lot of sheep to get to the wolf because the sheep are too stupid. So we've got to figure out a way to minimize the sheep's input Seriously, we've got to shut them up and get them out of the way so we can get to the wolves and not let them gum up the works. I mean, it's like what happened to me last night. All these people all mad at me when I was pointing out the evils of Zionism. Everybody was yelling at me and calling me a racist and everything. I said, you're missing the point. So I've got to, and I think you folks have probably run into this a lot too. If you're listening to this show, you know what I'm talking about. People that are too much concerned with losing their home, losing their Mercedes, losing their weekend house, they're of no use to us. Unless you can get them to convert everything they have and donate it to the cause financially, they're not of any use to us. Their children, maybe, if we can get their children to wake up. That's why I'm happy about doing this Boy Scout thing coming up next month. And in or July, I won't be doing it next month because I'll be in a class. Finally, I get to actually be a student. But we've got to come up with a way to get those folks out of our way so that we can get at the core problems. Because when you think about it, there's probably 3-10% that are evil and 3-10% that are good, and everybody else is just stupid. Does that sound bad? Am I being awfully draconian? Am I being I don't know what the word would be, but I honestly believe that. It came to me in an epiphany yesterday listening to the history of the original Tea Party and how they went onto the ship, paid for the tea. They said, we may have to pay for it, but we're not going to drink it. And they dumped the tea into Boston Harbor. It was a symbolic victory. Pastors going and speaking, you know, the gospel at a DMV in Riverside. You're not going to see a lot of that. You're not going to see people, you know, getting too upset over stuff. Sure, everybody right now is upset about the birth certificate thing, and you'll notice I'm not talking about it because it's been flogged to death on the other shows, but God bless them. If you want to know more about it, go to Infowars.com and look it up. I'm not going to do the same thing over and over again unless I have a different opinion on it, but right now I agree with what kind of stuff they're showing. But I don't know what the key issue is going to be. I was kind of hoping it would be the NFL lockout. I'm just kidding. That would get everybody up in arms. But we don't know. I mean, just, you know, now here in California, they're saying you need a permit to get a water heater and install a water heater in your house. You need to be put in by a contractor. You have to pay all this money. Instead of going and buying a $150 water heater and just putting it in, you have to have it inspected now. They're doing away with open carry, but most people in California don't care about that because they're afraid of guns. But everybody cares about a water heater. They're talking about making us rip our septic systems, our rural folks, out of the ground and put in new state-of-the-art septic systems that are greener. But then again, those of us that live in the rural area don't have much say, do we? They know where to attack us, don't they? You know, the people in the pocketbook, that's what Stacy says, and the people in the cities, they're going to play along with these stupid little things. But eventually they're going to need to cross the line. And they're going to go after the hippies, the yippies, and the gypsies, and all these people. And then maybe they'll wake up, and then we'll be going, see, I told you so. And then they're going to come crawling back to us and say, well, what are we going to do about it? So I don't know what you're doing about it, but this is what I'm going to do about it. You know? And I just don't, I can't see what that is. I have faith in our Lord Jesus Christ that when he presents it, I'll be able to discern it and know it, what it'll be. And I don't think it's going to be another Waco or another Ruby Ridge because we keep letting those things go. I know for a fact if they suddenly swarmed this building and Lou and Stacy and I shot it out with them and came to a standoff, you folks wouldn't come to our defenses. You'd scream and yell on the computer. I'm being honest. I'm not trying to belittle you, but you'd be like, wow, that really stinks what they did to Dutch. And then after they kill us for a couple months, you'll remember it. And maybe on the anniversary for a few years, you'll say something about it. But no, it's not going to take blood of patriots anymore to trigger this. It's going to be pocketbook oriented. It's going to be like I see freedoms. There's a serious transition going on because the dollar right now, including all world currencies, time is short to prepare. It's going to be a monetary thing. And one day they're just going to do a bank holiday, and maybe then. But then I don't know. I just have faith that the Lord's going to use something to move this cause in the direction he wants it to be in. And that's what gets me out of bed every morning. And I keep that's why I keep searching the horizon. I read news articles. What is it going to be? I'm trying to catch the wave before anybody else does. I'm that surfer that goes out a little bit farther than everyone, risks the great white attack so I can get a decent wave. not because I want to be cool and hip and be the first one to, you know, be able to brag about it. No, I want to be able to tell you about it, and I want to be able to get you guys up here that are coming up here and get my family to, you know, be awake in the doorway to be there to greet you when you get here. Stay awake, Lou. Poor little Lou's had a hard day. His allergies really attacked. Did you take an allergy pill, Lou? You look like you did. You're falling asleep. Here, let me beat you some more. Bad kid. He's so tired he can't even bruise. He's too weak to bruise. I'm going to pinch you on the eye. Here we go. How'd that feel? How's that feel? I'll pinch you in the eye again. I found pinching him in the eye keeps him awake. And I'm asking you guys to do the same. Keep looking for that one thing off on the horizon that's coming and share it with us if you see it. God may use you to be prophetic in that way. He hasn't used me. I've missed most of them. Days of rage and things like that. I don't have a good record for those kind of things. So I don't. That's why when I do it, I give a caveat. I go, this is the gut feeling I have. I think next Thursday at noon, the lizard people are going to finally, you know, tear off their masks and tell us what's up. Yeah, I get those kind of emails too. So I don't know what's going to happen or when it's going to happen, but I keep looking. I keep remaining a watchman on the wall. You know, I don't want to be the guy that falls asleep while on duty. And I need your help for that. I need you guys to keep sending me the emails. And even if I don't talk about it on the air, you're building the attitude that comes across on the air. People say, well, I sent you tons of stuff and you've never mentioned it. I forward those to key people that need to see it. I share them in the intel meetings that we have here. I share it with the other groups that we're associated with. Pretty much everything I get that has a validity to it, I share. And if it doesn't, it's just something I store away in my mind. It's a piece of the puzzle. And then eventually when I see the whole picture, it becomes, bam, here's part of it. You know, and everything matters when you're gathering intel. Everything matters because we don't know where they're going to come at us. Just like I say, this is not going to be like previous revolutions. They also, they being the New World Order, the bad guys, Satan's armies, they're not going to attack us in any way that's ever been done before, and they're trying to come up with a new way to do it. They're probing us for tolerances and weaknesses, saying, when are they going to finally be weak enough that we can attack them? That's what they're thinking. I got some great articles today that I was reading on the pipeline in Alaska. They sent out a study saying if it bursts, it's going to do millions of barrels of oil a day, unlike what the oil companies claim there will only be a few thousand barrels a day. So they're getting us ready. So now another pipeline that Obongo has that he can cut off, they'll bust it. But they always advertise before they do it. The Canadian pipeline that was being built from Canada, what's Canada all about, Lou? Wake up. The Canuckistan, yeah, the oil from Canuckistan, that's what it was, to Texas, they stopped it again because of EPA impact stuff. Anything they can do to starve us of oil. And somebody asked me, well, why is gas going to be $8 a gallon? They don't want us to move. It doesn't matter if we're a militia or a modern standing army. We need fuel. I said if Hitler had two more refineries and one oil field that he had access to on a regular sustainable basis, we'd all be speaking German right now. No doubt in my military mind. He lost that war because God didn't let him have access to oil, to lubricate and fuel, period. You can break everything else down. Oh, he didn't have the moral high ground. Europe was an overwhelming force. No, it was all came down to mobility and lubrication, period. And that's the way battles, if you study them throughout history, they come down to two or three key things. And people don't like it when I do that because, oh, no, it's a complex thing. No, that's how people get PhDs. They make things overly complicated. It's pretty basic. People, you know, you study warfare. One of the biggest leaps in modern warfare for ancient times was the stirrup. It put men off the ground and on a horse with a lance and gave them leverage. The stirrup changes everything. Wheat. The first wars were fought over wheat between Lagash and Ur in the Holy Crescent area. Wheat started warfare. Haves and have-nots. It's simple stuff. It comes down to that. And I try to boil that down every day, and when I see these articles, because they hide the nuggets of truth and all the confusion that's out there, don't they? All the different articles. Something's going on with Gifford. You know, they're making a big deal out of Gifford. She's going to be at the last launch of the last space shuttle. We haven't seen any other victims. We haven't seen her. We don't know what's going on. And they're also at the National Convention for the NRA. There's going to be a bunch of people there with her image protesting, even though she was pro-gun, which is weird. But there's something going on here, that whole shooting down there. I don't have enough information on it, but nothing is ever what it seems. And they're 5 to 6 moves ahead of us, sadly. They control the board, the enemy. But we can get glimpses. We can catch up to them once in a while if we just pay attention and stay awake, Lou. Throat shot. That usually helps him if I punch him in the throat. Now he's curled up in a ball, gasping for air. It's too bad his mic's not on. He makes a nice wheezy sound when I punch him in the throat. You alive, Lou? See what I mean? It's hard for him to talk when I punch him in the throat. But folks, just that we know it's coming, we keep looking, we must focus on preparing. I See Freedom's basically captured the whole concept of this show. We know what's coming. Why keep looking? We must focus on preparing those who will cooperate. Well, we have to see it coming because it's like a punch to the head. Even though you know the punch to the head's coming, it's nice to be able to block it, don't you think? But the key thing is preparing for the punch and getting as many other people as you can to look out for the punch. So we do have to see when it's coming. If otherwise, you're just sticking your head in the sand and next thing you know, there's a knock on the door. Wouldn't you like to know 2 or 3 miles out that the vans are coming? You've always got to be looking on the horizon. Never, ever, ever just rest and trust in your stored equipment, your training, or your gears. Don't trust in chariots and horses. You know, you've got to make sure that you have active intel going at all times. Otherwise, you're blind. So that's why you have to look at the horizon. Even if you think you know what's coming, we may be waiting for a punch to the head, but it may be a kick in the butt. Just as much, you know, pain is involved. It's just a different part of the body. So we don't know exactly what's coming. We just know what they want us to think we know. Does that make sense? We know that badness is coming. It's going to be evil, I tell you that. But we don't know how evil or to what extent they're going to strike first and strike hard. There may be a bunch of little strikes. If I were them, I wouldn't do one big felled swoop where suddenly everybody gets rounded up. I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it at all. I would do a bunch of little things so as to confuse and divert and distract. Think about it. When Germany, after Normandy, and they did what everybody knows is the Battle of the Bulge, they moved and hid units all over the place. When we did Normandy, get the dog back over there so he's not, I don't want him rolling around in the cables. Put him down over there. Ruger, go. You need to wake up. You've got to play the game. If they're going to be feigning attacks and building inflatable tanks, you've got to be able to make sure you know where they are. It's the same thing with this, with the New World Order. We have to keep our eyes on the horizon while we prepare. Simply to just prepare and put your nose to the grindstone and collect all the gear you can isn't going to be enough. Like I said, that's trusting in chariots and horses. So networking, talking to one another, and even if we do all that, we still may not see it coming. Like I said, the one thing that's going to ignite all of these people is going to be something I never thought of. It's probably going to be something like, look at, we talked about the Boston Tea Party a little bit. It was this outrageous tax on tea. What's tea? It's a drink. It's a caffeinated drink. It's no big deal. It was big in the culture back then. So today it might be a tax on soda. It could be a tax on cigarettes. And finally, people get mad enough and be like, well, cigarettes are disgusting. They're a vile thing. You know, I would never want to do that. But that may be what triggers it. You know, it could be the a tobacco party where everybody, you know, stops the trucks on the freeway and sets them all on fire. I don't know. I have no idea what it's going to be. I don't pretend to know what it's going to be. But we've got to keep our eyes open for it. The only thing is it's not going to be what it was last time. Every revolution is different. Every coffee, yeah, Twinkle Toes is saying it could be coffee. The way some of you people are about your coffee, I wouldn't be surprised. If they suddenly banned coffee in America, I think it would be a violent, bloody, it would be more akin to the French Revolution than the American Revolution. You know, I don't know. But it's looking to me, it's going to be mobility. I'm going to just throw it out there, I'm probably wrong. It's going to be $10 a gallon gas, huge fees to own a motor vehicle, and people just won't be able to go around anywhere. And that's what they'll want to do. They'll want to keep you locked into your home. They may shut down the internet so we can't communicate. Because this is the new committees of correspondence, isn't it? You know, we're trying to do what we can. Scotty 38 saying gas in New York is $4.05 a gallon. I saw fuel yesterday $4.55 a gallon here in Fresno. For some reason, always has the highest gas other than Hawaii and Alaska. I don't know. I don't understand why, but that's what it is. So for me, it's fuel and mobility. They're going to take away our right to move about, or take away our ability to move about. So we're going to do what we can. Remember, folks, we're coming up at the top of the hour. Stick around. Vice Gerent, I said Vice Gerent Radio. That's the other one over there. This is Stronghold Radio. You're listening to Dutch Jones. In the next hour, we'll be hooked up with Liberty Tree Radio. We're going to have Pastor Warren Mark Campbell on for Practical Christianity. And we're going to discuss a lot of really good stuff. So stick around. And remember what I said. We don't just point out the problems. We're heavy on the solutions. We're heavy on the explanations of why things happen. Because simply just telling somebody something like, oh, his birth certificate's a fake, what good's that do you? That doesn't give you any power to go out and do anything. But if we show you how to find what things are fake and what things are real, and how to know what the real thing is over the fake. Am I making any sense? I hope so, because it's making sense in my head, but sometimes it doesn't always translate. So we'll be back after the break, folks. Thanks for hanging in there. You're listening to Dutch Jones. It is the 28th of April, a Thursday, 2011. We are live, and we'll be back right after the break.
When our country started growing and the wagons headed west, when a country called for pioneers, his name led all the rest. What a figure in his rawhide coat and hat made of raccoon. Wonder what there was about him made you think of Dan O'Boone. Of thinking he's the Lincoln of the day. If we're fixing for a tussle, it's his muscle all the way. If we need a handsome fella so the ladies' hearts can throb, there's a Yankee Doodle Dandy always handy for the job.
When the crash does come, when there is a natural disaster, during civil unrest, the last thing you want to be is a refugee. So check out DutchJones.info. That's www.DutchJones.info. We have the supplies you need and the information you will need. That's www.DutchJones.info.
Keep on the foreign line. If you win the battle, surely you must fight. So keep on the foreign line. Brother, keep on the foreign line. Keep on the foreign line.
That's right. Keep on the firing line. You're listening to Stronghold Radio, coming to you from Camp Cahuilla, California, in the belly button of southern, central, northern California, right here at the gates of Sequoia National Park, where we bring you the Christian militant worldview. Every Thursday, we have the special treat of having the pastor of the church at Cahuilla, Pastor Warren Mark Campbell, on for Practical Christianity. Now, pastor's here with us now, and he's going to give us an overview on Is it the biblical doctrine or just protest in general?
That's the doctrine. We'll see in the Bible where protesting is a method in dealing with tyrants.
Great. This is going to be very useful and very timely. So without further ado, here's Pastor Warren Mark Campbell.
All right. Good evening, everyone. Yeah, we want to look at in Practical Christianity tonight the concept of how we deal with tyrants from a biblical basis. There's four major ways in which we can deal with the tyrant, and we've looked at some of these before, and we'll look at some of them in the future. We haven't dealt with them all, Dutch and I, but we have at the church. But the first one is protest or legal action. That's what we're going to look at tonight. The second one is the biblical doctrine of deception, deceiving the tyrant. The third one is the doctrine of flight, the biblical doctrine of flight, where Jesus said if they persecute you in one city, you know, flee to the next city.
Right.
So we've looked at that, and we'll be looking at that. And then there's fourth major way of dealing with the tyrant is at literally through armed resistance.
Mm-hmm.
And that we can look at that someday. And I know you deal with that quite a bit, Dutch, so
right.
We're not going to deal with that tonight. But let's look at this concept of protesting or legal action as a way of dealing with a tyrant or censoring the tyrant. So we're going to, because this is Practical Christianity, we're going to look at some scriptures here. So the first one I want to talk about is the concept of public censure. You censure the tyrant. So in Luke chapter 13, verse 31 and 32 will be our first verse. It's amazing when you start going through the Word of God and you start seeing these verses, Dutch, because they just seem to get glossed over so much. Luke 13, verses 31 and 32. And the same day there came certain of the Pharisees, saying unto Jesus, Get thee out, get out of here, and depart hence, for Herod will kill thee. He's going to kill you if you hang around here. Now here's Jesus' answer. And he said unto them, Go ye and tell that fox. Now a fox is a crafty animal. And so he's saying that Herod is a crafty animal, that I cast out devils, and I do cures today, and tomorrow and the third day I shall be perfected, and then I'll complete what God the Father's had me to do. So he said, you go tell that fox around everybody listening, I know who he is, I know he's a crafty individual, I know he's up to no good, the fox is looking for a hen to steal, all right? He says, I'm going to cast out the devils, and I'm going to heal today, and I'm going to do it tomorrow, and I'm going to do it the third day as well. And he says, and then when I complete my mission, if I want to, I'll go on. So here he is, he's calling the leader of that area of Palestine, he's calling him a fox, and he's saying, I'm going to stick around, I'm going to do what I want, whether you like it or not. You know, nanny, 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 in a modern vernacular. Now, if you open your Bibles to Matthew chapter 14, verses 3 and 4, this is some of you might be aware of this one a little bit more. This is in reference to John the Baptist.
Right.
And so John the Baptist, it says in verse 3, of Matthew 14. For Herod had laid hold, King Herod, this is that old fox, had laid hold on John and bound him and put him in prison for Herodias' sake, his brother Philip's wife. So what we have here is Herod rubbed out Philip, his brother, so he could get to his wife. And John had said unto him, verse 4, it is not lawful for thee to have her. This is a New Testament verse for those that are always talking about we've got to be in the New Testament all the time. And
right.
So here's a New Testament verse that says, Christians, you do get involved in politics. You speak into the realm of the civil magistrate in the New Testament. This is what John is doing. And he's saying, it's unlawful for you to do that. And I think more people that were in positions of power and prominence should say to President Obama, it's unlawful for you to do such and such. It's unlawful according to the Word of God or according to the Constitution for you to do thus and so. And so here you have a public censure and protest by John the Baptist, and it did cost him his life eventually, as you would read on the rest of those verses there, which I'm not going to get to. The point is, here's John, he's protesting. And by the way, John is a prophet. The Bible says, the prophets were until John, and the kingdom of heaven suffereth violence, and the violent take it by force. And so it is in the realm of the prophetic. When you get into the civil realm, you're getting into the realm of the prophetic, and you can expect real spiritual warfare, Dutch. I think this is what some people don't understand that. I've seen when I've been in the standing on the street in the pro-life movement, maybe holding a placard. I've been flipped off. I've been sworn at.
Spit on.
All kinds of things happen when you get into these areas because lives are affected. See, we can kick back and say Christians aren't not to get involved, and we're left alone, you know, basically.
Yeah.
When you get out in the political fray, you know, the hackles of anger, the hatred against Jesus Christ come up when we start pressing the crown rights of King Jesus. And so Herod is importing the word of God here. He says it's unlawful for you to commit murder so that you can get to your brother's wife. And so he paid a price for it. So what he's doing is he has two examples now of protest, public censure. Jesus says, tell Herod that fox, I'm not going to cooperate. I'm going to do what God's what the Father's called me to do. John the Baptist had said, has said it's unlawful for you to have this woman because you killed your brother to get to her. And so we have another example of protesting a tyrant, and that is Jesus in his refusal to cooperate with Pilate. Matthew chapter 27. Matthew chapter 27, verse 14. We'll pick up for a context here, verse 11. Matthew 27, verse 11. And Jesus stood before the governor, and the governor asked him, saying, Art thou king of the Jews? And Jesus said unto him, That's what you're saying. And when he accused, and when he was accused of the chief priests and the elders, he answered nothing. So now it's the chief priests and elders, they're making all kinds of ridiculous accusations. And Jesus is actually fulfilling that verse in Proverbs here. Answer not a fool in his folly, lest you be like him. Mm-hmm. The charges were so ridiculous that Jesus didn't even have to answer him. It's sort of like when Randy Weaver was put on trial years ago back in the early 90s, Dutch, and Jerry Spence, the great attorney from Montana, he did not bring one witness in defense of Randy Weaver. And Randy Weaver was found innocent, and he won that trial based upon the ludicrous statements of the FBI, based upon their lying, their falsifying of documents and records.
Vipers.
You know, they were vipers, and so he didn't even bring, Randy Weaver didn't testify on his own behalf. Right. Nobody testified on Randy Weaver's behalf because the fools that those particular FBI agents had made out of themselves, monkeys. And so this is what's going on. They're accusing Jesus of all this ludicrous stuff. Verse 13, Then said Pilate unto him, Hearest thou not how many things they witnessed against thee? You know, and he wants a response, but Jesus doesn't respond. In verse 14, And he answered him to never a word insomuch that the governor marveled greatly. Now, this refusing to cooperate can play up to a point. Silence plays up to a point, and then you've got to move on. You've got to do something else. But it is a tool. It's a tool that Jesus used that we can use, and I know other Christian patriots have used when they've been in a kangaroo court.
Mm-hmm.
They just remain mute, and they refuse to cooperate.
I have nothing to say.
I have nothing to say, you know, because they recognize the... And the judge usually at that point knows it's a kangaroo court, and he understands what's being said there, the lack of cooperation. Mm-hmm. Why there's a lack of cooperation? Because they're already guilty in the juror's mind.
Nothing's
going to
change.
Nothing's going to change. They're just trying to rubber stamp the situation.
Yeah, why play the game?
All right. So then that leaves us another concept here of in this doctrine of protest when we're dealing with tyrants, and that's wiping the dust of our feet. Wiping off the dust. Yeah. And that's found in Luke chapter 10, and that's when it'll lead us into the Boston Tea Party, Dutch, we were talking about last night. Luke chapter 10 and verse 11. And I would actually be reading verse 8, and Jesus said, he's talking about the 70, he sent out the 70 in verse 8 of Luke chapter 10. And into whatsoever city you enter, and they receive you, eat such things as are set before you. Heal the sick that are there, and say unto them, The kingdom of God is come nigh unto you. But into whatsoever city you enter, and they receive you not, go your ways out into the streets of the same, and say, Even the very dust of your city, which cleaveth on us, we do wipe off against you.
Yeah.
Notwithstanding, be you sure of this, Jesus says, that the kingdom of God has come nigh unto you. He says, if your city won't even receive you, you're there to preach in my name, you're there to heal folks and do good, and they won't receive you, go outside the gates, the very dust of the city, and you wipe it off, you know, and a symbolic action, because, you know, at the gates of the city, there outside the city is where everybody could see people coming in and out. And so it would be a symbolic action that the people standing outside are wiping the dust off their feet to the city, saying, all right, we all have nothing to do with you. We're not responsible to you anymore. We're not going to cooperate. You know, you don't want to work with us. We're not going to work with you. And so this is a case that we find all the way back. Now we go back to 1773, Dutch, in the Boston Tea Party, and we're going to see this concept of boycotting or protesting as a way of dealing with the tyrant. Mm-hmm. So King George has been taxing the colonists through the Townshend Acts, which were unjust acts, where he was taxing their glass, their paint, the oil.
Mirrors, their copper pots,
yeah, lead,
everything.
Everything he could think of. And the colonists had began to fight against it and rebel against it, and rightly so. But he kept the Tea Act. And in 1773, he said, look, all you're going to have to do is just pay this little tiny amount, and I'm removing the other acts. But the colonists realized that there was a principle involved here of the concept of taxation without representation. And King George was saying, all right, I'll get rid of these taxes. He was feeling some heat from the protest, but he's going to keep the one tax to show him who's really boss.
Yeah. And thorn in their side.
And he thought that that would suffice him. But they said, look, it's not the paltry tax we're talking about here, but there's a principle that's at stake.
Yeah.
So now I'm going to read to you a little bit from the Boston Tea Party here, found in America's Providential History, which you know that we're going through on Wednesday nights. And so, quoting now from America's Providential History, after Parliament imposed a tax upon all British tea sold in the colonies, the colonists gathered together and determined that they would boycott the tea and not purchase it. They would boycott the tea. And I mentioned last night, and I'll mention it today, Dutch,
good,
that we get the word boycott. It goes back to about 1880 in Ireland, where you had a Captain Boycott. His actual name was Charles Boycott. And he was persecuting the very, very poor people that lived on his land. He was like a modern-day slumlord, even worse than that, in that he was actively persecuting his people that lived on his land, that did his work. And for just the smallest things, he would kick them out, and they'd have no place to go. He made life very miserable for the people there in Ireland. And finally, through the help of a Catholic priest by the name of O'Malley, he said, you know what, we're going to have to stand up to this guy. Something's going to have to be done, because people are starving. They're being deprived of daily food and bread because of this man. And so they came up with this concept of, you know what, we're not going to cooperate with Mr. Boycott, Captain Boycott, anymore. We're not going to sell him any goods. When he goes into our town, he's not going to be able to buy bread. When he goes into our town, the owner of the local restaurant is not going to serve him. The taxi ferry service of the oxes and the carts, they're not going to work for this guy. And then the citizens actually got together, and they surrounded Mr. Boycott's estate, and they said, all the servants, you need to come and leave this man. We're going to have nothing to do with him. And so I think it was Father O'Malley later on realized he coined the term boycott. We're actually committing a boycott against him. And so we go back now to 1773, and we import the word boycott into it. What it was is they were refusing to cooperate with King George. They weren't going to buy his tea. They didn't want to have anything to do with it. And so we get this concept here of boycotting. While we mention the concept of boycotting and not purchasing things and refusing to cooperate, I think it's important to remember that our founding fathers really took a stand in many different ways, Dutch, when they were dealing with the tyranny of King George. And one of those was Samuel Adams. And Samuel Adams, who's known as the father of the American Revolution, it's said historically that he refused to eat anything or drink anything or wear nothing imported from England until all the duties on goods should be taken off.
Right.
And so he's making a stand here. He said, I'm not going to drink any tea. I'm not going to wear any clothing that's imported from England. I'll pay a higher price. I'll get it from Holland. I'll pay a higher price. I'll get it from France. And so he was really acting as a patriot in love of his country.
Mm-hmm.
And so you recall last night we were discussing the fact that we need to do the same thing and to buy American-made products as much as we can.
Sure.
It's a form of protest. It's a form of boycotting because we recognize the products from communist China and other communist lands are going to come back to us. That money is going to come back to us in our own destruction of our country, whether through bombs or whatever the case may be. And so we see the example here of the colonists refusing to buy goods imported from England because they saw the problems with it. And we need to be much more careful. And folks, I know it's not always easy. Everything is just about, almost everything's made in China today. I understand that. But for an example, when it comes to tires for my car, I purchased Cooper tires. Cooper is one of the last major, I think Goodyear, the last I heard, was just Goodyear and Cooper, the only last major tire makers. Now, there's a couple little tiny small ones that make tires in America. That's fine. Use them. But I pay a higher premium. It costs more. If I buy a tool, I do my best to buy an American-made tool. I have to pay a premium for it. And I know that we can't always do so. In other words, I drive a Honda. because you know I know that the American cars are basically foreign cars anyway.
Yeah,
if it's a Chevrolet or Ford,
parts,
so I know it gets real sticky and mixed up, folks. But I'm just saying, as if you can, I believe in the bumper sticker which says, "Buy American, the job you save may be your own." So,
right.
Folks, as you can, buy American. When it comes Christmas time and you're buying gifts, as you can, buy American-made gifts and support support your neighbor, support your brother and sister, many of them who are in the cause.
Yeah.
And you can go online, you can do research. Some people, there's some great tools out there of the many companies that are of products made in America.
That's right, that toy website you sent us to 1 year. To buy American-made toys.
Yeah,
I remember that.
A toy website. There's websites for, and they're actually improving as the years go on, for people to purchase just more items.
Mm-hmm.
Got to pay a premium, that's true. But I think it's worth it in the long run. So that's
sure.
A part of patriotism. And it's a part of protesting the tyranny of a different sort that has come upon us because our congressmen, our senators, and our former presidents, and our current bunch as well, they make it so easy for the communist Chinese to have such a heavy sway and heavy hand.
Trade imbalance,
yeah. And so we're getting this concept now at the Boston Tea Party where they actually boycotted and they were refused to purchase the tea. Now we go back here to America's providential history. It says, as ships full of tea were on their way to America, patriots, I like that term, patriots in Philadelphia, Boston, New York, and Charleston, the major destination ports for the ships, were held town meetings. When the ships arrived in Boston, the Patriots put a guard at the docks to prevent the tea from being unloaded. Almost 7,000 people gathered at the Old South Meeting House to hear from Mr. Roch, the owner of the ships. And the Old South Meeting House was the former Puritan house of worship. So you see how that it was no problem in that day for people to meet in churches and discuss politics.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll just throw that in as a freebie.
Yeah.
I won't elaborate tonight on that one. Right. So almost 7,000 people gathered at the Old South Meeting House, a church house, to hear Mr. Roch, the owner of the ships. He explained that if he attempted to sail from Boston without unloading the tea, his very life and business would be in danger. Now, he could have made that bold act, but he didn't want to, and the colonists said, you know what, all right, we don't want to put you under that much jeopardy, Mr. Roch, so we'll come up with another plan. But one of the things I wanted to address here, Dutch, was this concept of this taxation of representation. What was going on with the tea tax? Why is it, too, that the founding fathers, you know, in Boston said, we're just not going to have anything to do with this? Because this new tax, this tax that imposed on the tea had one object that was really in particular, and actually there was three objects, but one that was more important. We'll look at all three objects that this tax had. Number one, it was to pay the soldiers sent here to do the king's will. So the tax from the tea would be paying for soldiers. Number two, it was to pay the governors, judges, and other officers of the crown in the colonies.
To pay for the oppression.
To pay for their own oppression. And isn't that, folks, what we're doing for a
right
lot of
now.
Our taxation? We're paying for our own oppression. And we're paying for skewed judgment. So let me list this again. This is from the U.S. History, edited by Bob Cosby, a book on U.S. history. He said the second thing of this tea tax was to pay the governors, judges, and other officers of the crown in the colonies. This would make them wholly dependent on the king. So their judgment, when you're looking for a judge, an officer, you're looking for fairness, his fairness is going to be skewed because he knows for who's buttering his bread.
Lapdog of the king.
He's becoming a lapdog of the king, and they would no longer feel that they were responsible to the people or must do their best to serve them. They would be responsible to the king because that's where their cushy job came from.
Right.
And so many people today, it's, you know, what is it, about half the people are working on government, you know, payrolls.
Here in California, yeah.
And they know that it's a cushy job. They know it's, generally speaking, a secure job. And so we have people now, you know, this is an interesting concept, Dutch. And it's just only coming to my mind. I'm formulating this here recently in the last year or two. But as we talk about, you know, third generation welfare recipients and fourth generation welfare recipients, we have second, third, and fourth generation public civil servants, and I see them in our own community, and they're the ultra liberals that we're fighting, that are trying to oppress us, take away our freedoms. And not only do they work for the government, whether it's a school teacher or the local city council,
police
or the legislative branches or police department,
park service,
good idea, park service. They then get their children to work for the civil government, and so the children never learn about private enterprise, working for the private sector, And I was just hearing on the radio today about how many people in the Obama administration have never worked in the private sector.
Yeah, I heard that.
So therefore, they're persecuting us because they don't have a concept of how difficult it is to make a living in the private sector.
They don't know what a small business would go through because they've never had a job at McDonald's or managed a hardware store. None of them.
Absolutely. So we have a nation of dependence upon the welfare doles, but we also have a nation of dependence upon working for the civil government.
Isn't it really the same thing, though? It's
a welfare in a different form.
It's just a trough. You know,
it's a lot better, more expensive trough. Yeah. You know, they do a lot better than the small amount.
They get up and go somewhere during the day.
Yeah, and
they do a lot more evil though than I think the welfare recipients do.
And I think that's a good point, Dutch. It's just another form of dependency on the civil government. So therefore, they vote all this largesse to themselves because of that. And then the Tea Party tax, there was a third reason, and that was to give large sums of money to leading citizens and thus hire them to use their influence for the king. Mm-hmm. It was actually paid lobbyists. So this tax, and our founding fathers understood that this tea tax, how paltry it was that they could actually buy an imported black market Dutch tea more expensively than what the king was offering, because it was just such a small amount that he was doing. But the king was saying by this, look, I'm the Lord, I'm the master.
I decide. You don't have a say.
And the colonists said, look, that's the principle we're not going to fight for. The duty, you know, was retained not for the money it would yield, but to the maximum right of the British government to tax the colonies. So the amount, like James Madison said, never give the government the ability to tax you 2 pence, just a couple of cents. Don't give them that ability, because from there, you know, the nose of the camels under the tent.
You'll never get that 2 cents back, 2 pence back, and they'll always increase other areas because, like, well, we've justified it by doing 2 cents on the soda can. Now let's do a nickel on the Twinkie.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the way we see it today.
Boy, oh boy, it just goes on and on and on. All right. Now getting back to this concept here of the Boston Tea Party. All right. So almost 7,000 people, back to America's Provincial History, gathered at the Old South Meeting House to hear from Mr. Roch, the owner of the ships. And he said, and they decided, well, all right, we'll accept the tea because we don't want to put Mr. Roch's ships and his life in jeopardy, but they wouldn't have to drink it.
Yeah.
By accepting the shipment, they were agreeing to pay for it, but they would make a radical sacrifice. This is a very important statement they were making in order to protest the injustice before the eyes of the world. Thus ensued the Boston Tea Party. To make it even more newsworthy, as well as to protect individuals involved, the men disguised themselves as Indians, and we showed a clip of that from the movie Johnny Tremaine. By the way, Dutch, if any of your listeners have not seen the movie Johnny Tremaine, it's a Walt Disney movie.
We highly recommend it.
Yeah, both of us highly recommend
it. It's one of the good Disney ones.
Good Disney movie, and it's great for adults and children as well. So let me just read you here as we kind of prepare to close out this half hour here in a few minutes. Richard Frothingham records the incident. The party in disguise, whooping like Indians, went on board the vessels, and warning their officers and those of the custom house to keep out of the way, they unlaid the hatches, hoisted the chests of tea on deck, cut them open, and hove the tea overboard. They proved quiet and systematic workers. No one interfered with them. No other property was injured. No person was harmed. No tea was allowed to be carried away. And the silence of the crowd on the shore was such. Notice the silence. You got the people throwing the tea off, but there was also a crowd on the shore backing them up. Folks, this is where we need numbers to back one another up. That goes back, of course, to the concept of in community, more Christians, more patriots in a community where you can have the synergy to back one another up. So in Boston, there was a lot of patriots that could back each other up.
They were like their rear guard, kind of, to keep the Marines away if they had landed.
That's exactly right. And the silence of the crowd on the shore was such that the breaking of the chest was distinctly heard by them. The whole, wrote Hutchinson, was done with very little tumult. This whole thing was done with very little tumult. Soon after this, ships arrived at Philadelphia, New York, and Charleston, and were convinced to return to England. You know what? We don't want to just lose our tea for nothing. Let's go back to England. This confrontation brought about much unity throughout the colonies, and brought the first proposal for a Continental Congress. So the other colonies, watching the boldness, it's like that song, give me 10 men who are stout-hearted men who will fight for the right they adore. Give me 10 men and I'll soon give you 10,000 more. So sometimes the stand of 10 courageous men will cause others. Yeah. And we looked at that a few weeks ago, matter of fact, Dutch, when we were looking at the life of Gideon. When he tore down the altar, it got his own dad to to get bold and take a stand.
Yeah, and defend his actions.
And defend his actions because Gideon did such a righteous, bold action there.
Took down the grove.
So this was a what we're talking about here is fighting for a principle, all right, that the colonists at the Boston Tea Party, they were fighting for a principle, and it wasn't that the tax was so small or so paltry that they couldn't afford it or they were cheapskates. They were literally arguing for principle. And when we come back from the break, Dutch, I know you want to ask me some questions.
Yes.
About the modern-day Tea Party and are there any similarities. But what we've just done, folks, in this first half hour is we've just very quickly gone through the biblical doctrine of protest when dealing with tyrants. Remember that you have, in dealing with the tyrant, you protest the tyrant, you use deception against the tyrant, you may flee the tyrant, and that lastly, as last resort, you may resort to armed resistance if need be.
That's some great stuff right there, and we're going to take our break a little bit early here to all the stations down the line. We're listening to Pastor R. Mark Campbell as he talks about the biblical doctrine of protest, and a great example of that was the Boston Tea Party. And in the next half hour, I have some questions about where the differences between the modern Tea Party and the historic Tea Party. We'll be right back. You're listening to Stronghold Radio via Liberty Tree Radio. Thanks for tuning in.
Our guns and the British kept a-coming. There wasn't as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to run it on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico. We looked down a river and we see the British come, and there must have been 100 of them beating on the drum. They stepped so high and they made the bugles ring. We stood beside our cotton bales and didn't say a thing. We fired our guns and the British kept a-coming. There wasn't as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to run it on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico. Old Hickory said we could take them by surprise. If we didn't fire muskets till we looked them in the eye. We held our fire till we see their faces well. Then we opened up our squirrel guns and really gave them well. We fired our guns and the British kept a-coming. There wasn't as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to run it on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico. Yeah, they ran through the briars and they ran through the brambles and they ran through the bushes where a rabbit couldn't go. They ran so fast that the hounds couldn't catch them on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico. We fired our cannon till the barrel melted down. So we grabbed an alligator and we fought another round. We filled his head with cannonballs and powdered his behind. And when we touched the powder off, the gator lost his mind. We fired our guns and the British kept a-coming. There wasn't as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to run it on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico. Yeah, they ran through the briars and they ran through the brambles and they ran through the bushes where a rabbit couldn't go. They ran so fast that the hounds couldn't catch them on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
When the crash does come, when there is a natural disaster, during civil unrest, the last thing you want to be is a refugee. So check out DutchJones.info. That's www.DutchJones.info. We have the supplies you need and the information you will need. That's www.DutchJones.info.
If you're in the battle for the Lord and right, just keep on the fighting line. If you win the battle, surely you must fight. So keep on the fighting line.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, you're listening to Stronghold Radio over many networks. Okay, only one right now. One major network, that's Liberty Tree Radio, but we're also on Channel 2 in upstate New York. We're on Minuteman Radio. We're on Militia Radio. We're on the Watchman Radio. They play us out of sync, and all the pod people, welcome for tuning. Thank you, and welcome. I thank you gratefully for tuning in to our little endeavor here, coming to you from the Church at Cahuilla. It's Thursday night. It's time for Practical Christianity with Pastor Warren Mark Campbell. We spent the first half hour, if you missed it, you can catch it on the replay, talking about the historic Tea Party in Boston in 1773, 3 years before the Declaration of Independence. I mean, it was a long contest of wills, wasn't it? And what we want to go into now, and I'll throw it to the pastor, but I've got a bunch of questions about what your views and historically, spiritually, the modern Tea Party, because I'm not a big fan of it, and the show fans know it, and I want to kind of pick your brain a little bit.
Okay, the modern Tea Party, yeah, that's a good question. Well, we were there,
yeah.
Dutch, you and I, in the church, some of the church folks, in its first inception, in the first meetings. I remember speaking at the first one they had in a city nearby here. They had
that
an open forum. And, got in the gospel, the Lordship of Jesus Christ. You know, several of our folks spoke. And then by the time they had the real big one here, countywide, where they had several thousand
at the
show
International up. Agricultural Center. It was a tri-county meeting. 15,000, 20,000 people, I think it was.
And there we see that they began to gut the Christian content.
Yeah, Elvis impersonators and punk rock bands.
And the same thing, I guess, happened in Fresno to some degree.
Yeah.
To some degree. So what started out really good grassroots movement, I believe, Dutch, was co-opted by the neocons. Glenn Beck, I do not call Glenn Beck a neocon, but he got a lot of Tea Party supporters. And remember, they were at one point they were mad as hell, and they weren't going to take it anymore.
Sure.
They were going to do something. Something was they needed to be done. And he calmed them down and made them, the masses, more of lambs.
Moderate.
Very moderate, let's not step on any toes type of a concept. And I think he did some disservice there because he doesn't really understand the biblical doctrine of resistance to tyrants. He's right. A good man. I think he's a pretty good man. But he didn't understand that the timing of the situation needed more than just... the people were ready to do something really important, and to calm them down and say, okay, let's just all get together and kind of love each other.
Yeah,
he was missing it.
It squelched the momentum that was moving in that, and I really enjoyed that up until, like you said, we had a little booth at the second one, and we were discussing everything from homeschooling to godly warfare.
Yes.
It was great, but then the people go inside, and I'm going, what's going on inside? And they go, well, Elvis is up there right now.
So what you have here, and then I just got it was either an email or a letter, I forget which, in the snail mail, I can't remember which, but just in the last couple of days, where someone went to Sacramento where they're having a tea party, and they were passing out pro-life literature, and they were forbidden because they had made up thousands of copies, and they were forbidden by the leadership of this tea party to pass out pro-life literature. So what you have here is you have a departure from the Christian mooring, and we'll look at some scriptures here, Dutch, and this is really a problem. But let me first say, because I want to make sure we get to this before we get to looking at some scripture and discussion, Dutch, and that is, why do we have this problem? Is because we didn't have enough Christians stepping into the Tea Party
leadership.
And into leadership positions and saying, no, I want my voice to be heard. We did our best, but we're just small here. Again, mm-hmm. Our numbers are insignificant.
Yeah, we had 8-9 people that day.
Yeah, and so... And if you were not involved in the inception of a Tea Party, in the Tea Party movement, and you knew about it, folks, and you're a Christian, you erred. You should have been involved. You should have been pressing the crown rights of King Jesus as much as possible, mm-hmm. leaving a Christian testimony. Why? Why should we do that? Because Psalm 20, verse 1 says, Psalm 20, verse 7, some trust in chariots and some in horses. And the chariots and the horses were the military might of that day and their power and supremacy in numbers. But it says, we will remember the name of the Lord our God. They are brought down and fallen, but we are risen and stand upright. Then Hosanna, save Lord, let the King hear us when we call. That's King Jesus. That's mm-hmm. That's the Lord. And so we need to be very, very clear that it's Jesus Christ. Matter of fact, Psalm 20 there's an interesting, I wasn't going to get to it, but I think I'm going to go back to it. Psalm 20 says, verse 5, we will rejoice in thy salvation. See, we believe as Christians, our salvation is not in numbers. It's great to have numbers and great to have a big crowd when we're speaking at somewhere. But our salvation is not in numbers or military might. It's in the Lord. We will rejoice in thy salvation, and in the name of our God will we set up our banners.
Mm-hmm.
The banners were the military ensigns, the flags that they flew into battle, the flags of the camps, the various military camps. And they said, we will have the name of the Lord on our banners. And so it's an appeal, which just like in the time of the American Revolution, remember that Christmas tree? Remember that fir tree, wanted a Christmas tree? The fir tree, and underneath it, the Navy Jack was an appeal to heaven.
Right.
An appeal to heaven. The motto of the American Revolution, no king but King Jesus. And we need to reinstate Jesus Christ at the forefront of the Tea Party movement. Otherwise, it will be in vain. Now, folks, if you don't know this for next verse, you need to make sure you write this one down, Psalm 127:1. Psalms 127:1. This is the problem. This is why Dutch is saying he doesn't like that. What the new Tea Party movement has come to. It's been co-opted by the neocons.
Neocon.
And we'll look at that, Dutch. We'll talk about that next. But right now, folks, I'm giving you the spiritual foundation for what must be done, or it's going to end up as not. Psalm 127:1, except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to build the house of America again on a godly foundation. And the foundation must be Jesus Christ and the Ten Commandments, the Word of God, the law of God, or it's going to crumble. If we don't build our house as Jesus taught, the house of our nation on the rock. You build your life as an individual, Dutch, you do, mm-hmm. and I do as an individual. You build your family, wife and children, on the rock, Jesus Christ. I do my best to build my family on the rock, Jesus Christ. We build our church on the rock, Jesus Christ, but we also build our communities on our nations. And so if we don't build on the rock, when the storms of life and the assailing bullets of the New World Order and communism and Islam come against us, we won't be able to stand.
Right.
So except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain. So unless the Lord is involved and he's being honored in these Tea Party meetings, they're laboring in vain. Except the Lord keep the city, the watchman wakes, but in vain.
Right.
In those days, you had a watchman on the wall, the great walls of the city, and he was looking around, looking for the approaching of the enemy at night, seeing if he sees any movement of troop activity against the city. And he says, except the Lord keep him awake, except the Lord keep the city, the watchman waketh in vain. Whatever the case may be, his eyes might be blinded supernaturally or may get distracted when the enemy then approaches to the wall to make a breach at the gate to get into the city. But he said the Lord needs to keep the city. And we must have, the Lord must be involved. Jesus Christ must be honored. As Paul said in Colossians chapter 1, in all things he's to have the preeminence.
Right.
And so there's a problem with the current Tea Party if they are gutting Jesus Christ out of it.
You gave me the final piece of the puzzle last night during the Bible study. When you taught about they paid for the tea, they threw it overboard, they refused to drink it in a symbolic, hey, you don't get to violate the laws of liberty to the king. And I saw what the difference was. It wasn't about the tax. The modern Tea Party, almost to a person that I talk to now in the Tea Party, it's about their pocketbooks.
It's about their pocketbooks.
And as soon as a neocon gets in office and gives them a tax rollback, even though any tax that they're doing today is probably not just, not all, but just about any, it's not going to be any better, but they're going to be happier and they're going to stick their heads in the sand.
Yeah.
So as soon as their pocketbook is stroked and made happy, they're going to shut up and go home.
With just some small concessions, just some bones thrown at them. That's what happens over and over again. That's why I don't have much use for the Republican Party. They'll throw a few bones they've had for the last 25, 30 years. They'll throw a few bones to the religious right.
Yeah.
And that usually, like the lapdogs that they are, that satisfies them. As one of the leaders of the religious right said years ago, all we want is a place at the table, a place at the table.
Yeah.
Principle be hanged.
Yeah.
And that's what you're talking about. The Boston Tea Party, it was principle that they were fighting over, and they were willing to pay a price for that principle.
That's why they didn't harm the ship's crew. They didn't harm the ship or any other. There wasn't just tea on that ship. There were other items.
Yeah.
And they cleaned the ship. They left it as they found it, probably, if not better. And what I like is you talked about, you know, some of them wore Native American garb, but the leaders, like Mr. Adams, everybody knew who they were.
They
put their head on the block knowing what they were doing, but they were protecting the shop owner, the stable boy, you know, the clergyman that came along maybe, by allowing them to put on the... But everybody knew who everybody was, and it was symbolic. The anonymity in the Tea Party is that they're not really doing anything. They show up at these rallies. They feel really good. They do great things. I mean, crime is down. There's no litter. You see all the things that happen at Tea Party rallies compared to, like, liberal rallies.
Well, compared to, like, the union rallies.
Yeah, yes. I mean, they're disgusting, yes. Like the SEIU. But what are they really doing? And they're talking about getting a candidate now, and they're talking to Newt Gingrich as a possible candidate.
No way.
And who just converted to Catholicism,
yes,
told us.
I just read
and,
the news.
And you've got Ron Paul out there, but still a Republican. But we've got good people like Chuck Baldwin, which I don't think he'll ever run again from what I've been reading of his stuff. It'd be interesting if he would. Mm. But they're not.
No, he'll run, but he'll run in the state of Montana.
Yeah, and he's not going to run on the Republican ticket. You know, he's going to. So they're not even looking for somebody with the moral compass to stand in the gap. The Tea Party's not even, grooming anyone for it. You know, they're not going to Rand Paul or anybody like that. They're still sticking. Now, we don't know about Bachman. We've discussed
this. I think Michelle Bachman might be their choice. I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, that might be someone, but she's still a Republican.
Yeah.
And still works within their system. You know, they're not going to pick a Jesse Ventura or somebody like that. Well, anyway, he's an ex-patriot. But
it's hard to say.
Yeah. So I just don't see the substance. I don't see, of course, the Christian basis, the foundation, as you said. I don't see them striving to bring any moral
They're trying to just deal with the economic issue,
yeah,
like you said, and they're not, and they, because they, many within the Tea Party, because the neocons have come in. Let's talk about neocons for a minute. The neoconservatives, we call them neocons for short. They're people that claim the title of conservative, but they're really not like a true conservative ought to be.
They're consumers.
They're more consumers. They're not really, in their hearts, they don't walk within the constraints of the Constitution.
Yeah.
They, like a Newt Gingrich, they walk within the Constitution as it helps them and pleases them.
Sure.
You know, his contract with America, in my view, in a lot of the, you know, I'm going to get a lot of difference with the talking heads and the media there. Some of the, you know, the conservatives really liked his contract with America. I thought it fell really short of what it was supposed to do.
Yeah, it was a lot of fluff signifying nothing.
Yeah, signifying a lot of nothing. And he's basically a big government guy to a large degree. Now, you have to say, now, he would take an exception to that. But I would say big government in comparison to Ron Paul.
Yeah.
In comparison to Michelle Bachman, he is a big government guy. So's Mitt Romney.
Oh.
So's Mike Huckabee. They're big government individuals.
Sure. Sure.
But they're not big government individuals when you compare them with Barack Obama.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it's like voting on a curve, you know, when you've got the one kid in the class that gets the A, everybody hates it, you know, and they give you grades. I mean, not voting, grading on a curve. Yeah, anybody looks good to compare to Obongo, but it's still not where we need to be.
We're not to compare ourselves. That's unwise, the Bible says, to compare ourselves.
Why
among
aim
ourselves.
Low?
So this is the problem, is the Tea Party must get back to honoring Jesus Christ, and they must take the moral high ground, and they must do so without fear, and I think then God will begin to honor that. I'm thankful for the Tea Party guys that got in and gals this last election, especially if they're Christians and are seeking to honor the Lord.
But let's see them put actions to that too. I mean, I told everybody, you know, everybody got real excited about the revolution in the voting box. And I said, okay, 6, 7, 8 months down the line, let's see where they are. And they kind of let us down on this budget issue, and then the budget ceiling. You know, debt ceiling. I don't like to talk about politics on the show, but I can judge them by what they do.
Now, and that's the elected officials. That's not the Tea Party now we're talking
right.
about. Yeah, we're talking
about that they put in. That they put in.
Some of them caved in.
They threw a bunch of money behind a lot of people and a lot of votes, and I don't think they did their homework on a lot of these people.
I think there was about 20 or 30 that stood with Michelle Bachman and said, we're not going to support it.
Right.
But a number of them did.
Those
newly elected officials did. So.
Yeah. So what do you think it's going to take? How do I word this without sounding like
let me just continue here for a second.
Go ahead.
When we're talking about the importance of Jesus Christ being at the helm, George Washington looked back after the war, and especially after the events of Valley Forge there in 1777-ish, 1776, 77. He said the hand of Providence, and that's the hand of Almighty God, that was their term for God. Many times they would talk about providence. He says, the hand of providence has been so conspicuous in all this that he must be worse than an infidel and more than wicked that has not gratitude enough to acknowledge his obligation. What I'm saying to the Tea Party folks out there is acknowledge that you have an obligation to honor Almighty God. That with that, unless he builds the party, unless he builds the movement, unless he builds this country, you know, we'll be overtaken by the communist Chinese or by Islam or whatever the case may be. That we need him. And so stand with guys like George Washington. He said, look, when I look at what was going on here during this war, God's hand was working with us. And, of course, they had days of fasting. They had days in prayer. They had days of thanksgiving when they won a big victory. Like at one point, we had no navy, so we had something a little bit more than, bigger than a rowboat.
Yeah.
And it had a little tiny cannon on it. And it took out a big man of war of the British. So we had a day of thanksgiving acknowledging the hand of divine providence in that act.
Yeah.
I don't see them acknowledging divine providence or the Lord Jesus Christ in any of the tea parties. Now, that's the major stuff that we're seeing.
There may be little ones.
There may be little pockets. Yeah. And praise God. And if we can do that here locally in our county and in the cities around us, then we'll do it. We'll join with them. So I have no problem joining with them. But I do have a problem if they're going to gut any Christian content or moral content out of it.
Right. Another problem I had early on was, especially when we had our banner up, we had, remember the Alamo, remember Pearl Harbor. A lot of them came over, they misunderstood what we were saying, and they were like, yeah, we've got to send more troops to Afghanistan, we've got to send more, oh, we love it, you guys got that great battle banner up there. And we're like, no, those are unjust causes. The Tea Party, in a majority, is for unjust warfare. Therefore, God bless America, right or wrong kind of attitude. Real, real superficial, a mile wide and an inch deep. And I remember going around the booths, and they were really supporting, us going over and spending trillions of dollars to force democracy on people that have no concept of it.
There is something that we'll have to address sometime, Dutch, and we have to talk about the concept of just or holy war. And I think that will be something down the road you and I need to discuss is what makes a war just? Because, we're not pacifists here by any stretch of the imagination. Yet, we're against the war in Iraq. We're against the war in Afghanistan.
And Libya.
In Libya. Many of the wars in our nation's past I would be against. So we need to discuss what makes a war just or not. What makes it a war, a righteous war, a biblical war or not. But in Psalm 68, here's a verse we need to give the people. Psalm 68, verse 30, it says, rebuke the company of spearmen, the multitude of the bulls with the calves of the people, till everyone submit himself with pieces of silver. And here's the clause I want to get to. Scatter thou the people that delight in war. All right?
Mm-hmm.
Scatter the people that delight in war. There is a segment of our country within the neoconservative movement that really delights in the war. Is we got to go over here. Let's go to Libya.
Mostly.
Yeah. Let's go over to Afghanistan. Let's go here. Let's go there. Let's get in this war. Let's get in that war. And we do not want to delight in war at all. We don't want to be found among those. Now, we prepare for the day of battle, and we talk about that here. But, folks, take this verse into account, Psalm 68, 30. We do not go into war lightly. And with the whole concept of we've talked about before with militias and rather than a professional army is because the militias say, look, I'm not going to some foreign soil.
Yeah.
I'm not going overseas to fight.
Right.
But the professional army obeys it and says, hop to it. And they obey and they go over and all kinds of – and they're meddling in all kinds of foreign affairs. We don't want to get into a concept of war tonight. But I think that point that you made is well taken, that's part of the Tea Party – a movement that needs to consider, that we don't want to get bogged down in these endless wars. Now, we would be with Ron Paul in there. He's totally against those things.
Yeah, trade with all nations, entangling alliances with none. I didn't say that. I mean, I just did, but I didn't come up with it. Because I'm just saying those two issues there, to me, their warmongering, their hawkishness, they're caring more about their pocketbook, their superficial Christianity when it was okay to wave the flag. But as soon as somebody hands out a Right to Life flyer, they get all choked up. I almost think that the modern Tea Party is doomed from the beginning. And that's why I'm not a big fan of it. I'll go when they happen, and I'll try and force my way on the stage again, like when we did. And remember when the Irish lady got up and said that we shouldn't be preaching, and we let her have it?
Yeah.
But I almost wish there was a Christian Tea Party that was out there. And if you guys know one, email me. Let me know. I want to know about it. Because there needs to be a counter to this almost Wizard of Oz Tea Party that's out there now. You look behind the curtain, there's nothing really great there.
By the way, you mentioned a Christian counterpoint. The Constitution Party of America.
Oh, yeah.
If you go online and you type in the Constitution Party, you'll find that in its platform, it is the only platform of any party that I'm aware of. There may be another party smaller than the Constitution Party that's trying to be a national party. But the most significant of the third parties, that in its platform, it appeals to Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
See, that when you appeal to Jesus Christ, you are invoking the blessing of Psalm 2. In the book of Psalms, chapter 2, it says, Psalm 2, verse 10 to 12, "Be wise now, therefore, O you kings, be instructed, you judges of the earth. Serve the Lord with fear and rejoice with trembling. Mm-hmm. Kiss the Son," capital S-O-N, "that is, do him homage, lest he be angry and you perish from the way when his wrath is kindled but a little. Blessed are all they that put their trust in him." So Psalm 2 talks about, why do the heathen rage? The people imagine a vain thing. The kings of the earth set themselves and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and his anointed, that's the Father and Jesus the Messiah. "Let us break their bands asunder and cast away their cords from us. He that sitteth in the heavens shall laugh. The Lord shall have them in derision. Then shall he speak unto them in his wrath and vex them in his sore displeasure." God says, "I have set my king upon my holy hill of Zion. I will declare the decree. The Lord hath said unto me, Thou art my son. This day I have begotten me. Ask of me, and I shall give thee the heathen for thine inheritance, and the uttermost parts of the earth for thy possession. Thou shalt break them with a rod of iron, thou shalt dash them in pieces like a potter's vessel. Be wise now, therefore, O you kings, be instructed, you judges of the earth. Serve the Lord with fear and rejoice with trembling. Kiss the Son, lest he be angry and you perish from the way when his wrath is kindled but a little. Blessed are all they that put their trust in him." So I believe that God will honor and is honoring the works of the Constitution Party, in that they've got Jesus Christ there in their platform. By the way, you cannot no longer say that that a third-party candidate can't win anything of significance, because I remember in the state of Montana, as a Constitution Party candidate, a fellow by the name of Rick Jor won a seat in their legislature here about 6 years ago or something like that, So you can win as a third-party candidate.
Well, they've had Libertarian governor of Alaska, too, even though Libertarians...
That's good, though, but that point is still taken the same. Yeah, I think that's a real good point that we, we ought to make.
Right, right. So, I'm a little pessimistic about the Tea Party. When they have another one here and it's not on a day that we're doing a training or our own outreach, I'd love to go to it. I listened to the Fresno. They have a chaplain for the Fresno Tea Party. It's Jim Franklin from I think it's Foursquare Church in Fresno. He's a very inclusive pastor. I get on his show and I talk to him and I try and share these things with him, and he just chuckles and says, "Oh no, that was then. This is now stuff." So maybe there is hope. Maybe I'm being a little hard on our brothers and sister patriots, because they're still patriots. I'm not going to diminish their desire.
Right. Many of those people, that's the point, Dutch. Many of those people, they have real strong, they know something's wrong. They want to get involved, but the leadership has led them down a neocon pathway rather than getting back into a strong construction of the Constitution.
For me, when they copyrighted the name Tea Party, that was it for me. It was kind of like corporate church versus free church. I was like, oh no. And then when they were fighting each other over budgets and who gets to invite who to speak here and all that kind of stuff. But maybe there is a grassroots out there I don't know about, and I'm counting on the listeners to let me know about it. And anybody can say it's a Tea Party. We could have a Tea Party rally here at the church, and have a couple hundred people show up and do it like the first one in Hanford. That was beautiful. There was no party wog there. There was nobody in charge. It was just they asked us to get up and talk, remember? There were about 200 to 500 people, depending on which news article you believe. And they even let me get up and talk. And I just, the pastor just gave me, I think he gave me this book here.
Oh, yeah, I think I did.
Said, here, use our little booklet on great patriotic quotes to open up. And we infuriated a recent citizen from Ireland. Said, in my country, they mixed religion with politics, and look what happened. And then I got up and said, no, you're wrong, sister. you know, this country was based on Christian politics. So maybe there is a hope for it. You know, I still invite people to come on that want to talk about
it. Get involved in the Tea Party and leaven it if you can.
There you go.
Yeah, absolutely. We're not against it. We're just saying there's some cautions that we're raising here with it because, you know, they must acknowledge Jesus Christ. They must give him homage or it will go nowhere.
Now, going back to the original Tea Party concept and all the great stuff that you taught us last night, which next Tuesday it'll be up on the internet for you guys to download. We won't be near a good connection until then, but Lou will get it up next Tuesday when I go down from my doctor's appointments. We'll do that. So you'll be able to hear the Tea Party teaching on the church's website, www.thechurchatcahuilla.org. If you didn't get that, just go to our website and you can get it. The period of time, and it's kind of a broader section, but 1773 to 1776 was 3 long years. This wasn't the start. Lexington Concord was kind of the end. You had the Boston Massacre, you had all this.
Yes.
But the cool thing about the Boston Tea Party was is it showed how our founding fathers followed a just process to protest. They didn't just go sink the ship.
Absolutely. They 15 years of remonstrating.
That's the word I'm looking for, remonstrating. I couldn't remember the word.
15 years of remonstrating before the king. And just what you're saying here, Dutch, the Continental Congress on October 26, 1774, sent a petition to the King of England. This is 1774. This is after Boston Tea Party. And look at just a portion of the wording. They sent the petition to the king imploring him, quote, now, as the loving father of your whole people, to redress their wrongs. In other words, all the way up, they're saying, look, you're the father of your people, King. We acknowledge you as the king, but please redress these wrongs as a loving father. Help your children. Be nice to your children. Don't rape your children. Don't pillage and plunder your children. So we must have a record, Dutch. I think that's so important, just like what we've done here locally. We must have a record of appealing to the civil magistrate that we've tried the peaceful way. We've tried, and we have tried, and we have tried before you get to the fourth step of dealing with the tyrant, maybe perhaps tyrannicide.
Right. Because so many people today, especially associated with the show, the emails that I get, the contacts that I get, they're like, when's this going to start? Why is it taking so long? And I try to show them that even during the birth of this nation, it wasn't overnight. It wasn't like a bunch of white guys with wigs got mad, wrote the Declaration of Independence, and then we went to war. No. There were several practical and spiritual and legal things. There was like a triad there. We didn't have trained military. We didn't have a navy, like you said. We didn't have the moral right sometimes without establishing
it. That's right. And you've got to also know that if you're going to have a war, can you wage a full-scale, a long-term war on a full-scale basis?
Yeah.
And we're not ready for that, folks. Think about that. If that's one of the considerations before going to war, can you wage a full-scale war on a long-term basis? The War of Northern Aggression lasted, 4 years?
Yeah.
The War of American Independence, 6 or 8 years?
Yeah.
They last a long time. And you've got to ask yourself that question.
Well, we're out of time. I'm thankful that the pastor is able to give us time here live so that you guys can hear this. If you like what you're hearing, you can get all the sermons, 4 or 5 sermons a month, depending on how many Sundays there are, simply by sending a donation of $35 a month to the Church at Cahuilla. You can do it through their website. Email me. I'll help you do it. We've got a couple people doing it right now, I think. And just listen to this stuff. You're not going to get anywhere just sitting in your basement, grinding your teeth, shaking your fist at the unknown New World Order. We have solutions here. We have Christian-based solutions, which makes it even that much more important. I want to thank Liberty Tree Radio for sharing us with all of their listeners. I really greatly appreciate that, especially when we have great speakers on, like the pastor here and Steve Klein on Tuesdays. If you're interested in finding out more about us, email me, and I'll give you that now real slow. Dutch. DUTCH at DUTCH.